And it stopped and it told me Maya's blood pressure is 99 over 73. And it told me her heart rate is 87. And those are both extremely healthy blood pressure and heart rate. So we won't have to be sending you to the doctor anytime soon.
This is the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions podcast, and I'm your host, Maya Acosta. If you're willing to go with me, together we can discover how simple lifestyle choices can help improve our quality of life. Let's get started. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions podcast. I'm your host, Maya Acosta, and
I'm Dr. Rizwan Bukhari.
And today we have another segment of Doctor in the House. And this is really Dr. Riz, the expert that joins me every Monday. It's his segment. Every Monday, he talks to you about a health topic. And we've been covering in the past things like heart disease, type 2 diabetes, atherosclerosis. This is part three of a three-part series where we're talking about stroke for the month of May, Stroke Awareness Month. Dr. Riz, we have spoken about everything from really explaining to the audience the differences in the different types of strokes, how to know when a stroke is coming on, what are the risk factors of strokes. We learned in our last episode that women are at a higher risk of having a stroke, and even more, African-American women are at a greater risk of having a stroke. So I was thinking in this last episode, we can talk about those modifiable risk factors, the things that women and really people can do to reduce a risk. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to talk about blood pressure, just talking about that in general and how to use the monitors. And we're going to focus on nutrition and exercise as being those things that people can do to take control of their health.
Those are the two primary things that people can focus on where they get the biggest bang for their buck.
Yeah, yeah. Because we know that there are other things that we can't control. We can't control the fact that we're aging or that we're women. If we're a higher risk for being women, we can't really control even the fact that our hormones are changing.
Yeah. You can't control your genetics.
That's right. So, but you can control smoking. In other words, not smoking, but, I'm excited about this one because we're going to show the viewers, if you're watching the video, we're going to show you two different monitors and, you know, we're going to explain what the numbers mean because sometimes people don't know what they mean or what numbers to look for, what are ideal numbers. And if you're following Dr. Riz's social media, you're going to see diagrams that we're going to include in there. And one of them is like this. I don't know if you can see it in the camera, but it's titled Blood Pressure Measurement Instructions. And it shows you what to do before and how to take your blood pressure. Let me just kind of go down the list real quickly. And then Dr. Riz is going to take my blood pressure and he's going to talk to me about what's happening. Now, remember, you can go to a local pharmacy and do the same thing on mm-hmm. a machine. You don't have to do anything but put your arm in that slot area and it'll take your blood pressure.
Yep. Most pharmacies have it if they're working.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Now, 30 minutes before you take your blood pressure, don't smoke, don't exercise, don't drink any caffeine and no alcohol. And that's just so that you can get a better reading. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just trying to optimize and see what your blood pressure is when you're not doing anything. Uh-huh. But our blood pressure is going up and down all day in response to many different things, just like in response to if we've smoked or if we've had some caffeine or if we've had an adrenaline response due to something. So our blood pressure is going up and down at many times.
Yes.
So, you know, when we take a resting blood pressure, that may not be a true reflection of what your blood pressure is all day long.
So
I'm a big advocate for what we're going to get to in this episode, which is I suggest people have their own blood pressure monitor.
Uh-huh.
And they check their blood pressure several times a day. Mm-hmm. And what they're going to find out is they're going to see patterns in their blood pressure and patterns that occur at different times a day due to different responses.
Okay. It says here that when right before you take your blood pressure, just be still in the chair for about 5 minutes. And during the blood pressure, while it's being taken, relax, Don't talk. Rest the cuffed arm comfortably on a flat surface or a table at heart level. Sit upright, back straight and supported. Keep the legs uncrossed. I also would like for you to tell us whether we should have like a little journal to keep tabs of all of these readings. Okay, I think I'm ready.
I kind of say in the old days, the standard way to take a blood pressure was to put a cuff on somebody's arm. You would blow it up with a bulb, and that cuff would cut off the blood flow in your arm. And that cuff also is connected to a pressure manometer, which is on there. And so then you would start to slowly release the pressure in the cuff and allow the blood flow to come back into the arm. And you would use a stethoscope to listen to the artery, and then you would listen to when the noise would return and then when the noise would go away. And when the noise would return, that would be your systolic blood pressure. And when the noise would go away, that would be your diastolic blood pressure. And those have to do with the cycle of your heart and the beating of your heart. And they each have their own clinical significance.
Wow. I'm glad you're covering all this. I know you were about to say something, so I don't want to interrupt, but would you say that this here, this monitor, is what you brought from the office? Typically, people don't have the standard American is not using a stethoscope, or are they?
Yeah, I mean, so we have newer devices available today, which make taking your blood pressure so simple.
Okay.
That there's almost no excuse not to do it. When it was like this, blood pressure cuff and a stethoscope, it was a little bit more difficult. It required some skill set. It required some training, some repetition.
Wow.
So you had to be a medical assistant or a nurse with a significant amount of experience, or somebody who was doing it at home a lot, who had had some training. But you know, this is the way it was when I started medicine back in the 80s. And this new device is the way we, people can take their blood pressure at home today, very, very simply, without any, there's no complexity to it. You just put your arm in the cuff, press a button, it inflates the cuff, it takes your blood pressure and it gives you a reading. And there's a few various different types of devices. There's the ones that go on your arm, up here on your bicep. There's even the ones that go on your wrist. And you know, different people have different opinions about the accuracy of one over the other. I think it'll be interesting to take your blood pressure both with the kind of the standard old way of doing it and with the blood pressure cuff. I'll tell you today, in our ICUs and in our recovery rooms, we hook patients up to these automatic blood pressure cuff machines.
Wow.
And that way, that's one less thing the nurse has to do, because nurses have so many responsibilities. And this thing then is set on a timer to automatically take your blood pressure. It could be every 5 minutes. It could be every 15 minutes. It could be every hour. And, you know, of course, because things are so computerized, the blood pressure is just automatically downloaded into the computer for review. And if it's high, alarms will go off, et cetera. But so this is kind of the modern way of doing it. So this is why I say it's so easy, and it's quite affordable. You can get something like this for less than $50 from the drugstore.
What about Amazon? Can you find it on Amazon?
Oh, absolutely.
If we find a link, we'll put it in the show notes so that we can send you straight to it.
Absolutely. In fact, I'll do some research and find something that I think is good quality for a very reasonable price. And we'll add that to the show notes.
Now, this is wireless. I see that you can plug it to charge it. It looks like you can either...
This is battery operated, but that is a charger, so it could be plugged into a charger.
Okay, but I love that you can, if you need it, to travel with it along with your medications.
So yeah, we use this one for when we go and do some of our seminars and our different things and take blood pressures, because it's quite portable.
Okay.
And easy to use, and it's battery powered. You don't have to carry the charger around with you. So this is the one we take around with us that I like the most, because I think its accuracy is very good. But I'll even show you, I did mention that they even have one that's even smaller. It's portable. Look at it. It's all contained in something this big. And this is the one that you can put on the wrist. It literally has a little strap. You put it around your wrist. And this is the size of it. It's very, very, very small.
So it's all in one kind of a thing.
Yeah. And it's also battery operated. But I actually personally don't find the ones that work on the wrist to be as accurate. So I don't rely on it.
So we're not going to use this one for demo. So this is the one that it's called the Omron.
Omron. There's a million companies, but this one is called Omron. I'm real big into recording my health, my sleep, my meditation, my yoga, my cycling, my walking, my hiking. And so I use my Apple Watch. So this is not a plug for Apple Watch, but and then I use my Apple Health app and I put my blood pressure in it. It takes just seconds, you know, so I have lots of records and patterns. Where I can follow all these things. So the Apple Watch, I think, is kind of this interesting thing in evolution. And as are many devices, this is just the one I choose to use. Right now, the Apple Watch can check your oxygen saturations.
Okay.
So I can see what my oxygen saturation is when I'm walking or exercising. I can also see what my oxygen saturation is when I'm asleep at 3 a.m. at night. That's one thing it does. It monitors my heart rate when I'm awake. It monitors my heart rate when I'm exercising. It monitors my heart rate when I'm asleep. It tells me my resting heart rate. And then it does have this special function where it can tell you if you have an irregular heartbeat.
Uh-huh.
It just only makes a distinction between a normal heartbeat and an irregular heartbeat.
Okay.
But it doesn't tell you about all the different types of irregular heartbeats. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and demonstrate the blood pressure machine. And I'm just going to show you the new automatic one because it's not my recommendation that you go out there and get a blood pressure cuff with a manometer and a stethoscope and do that yourself when we have these really nice new things available to us that are very affordable. So Maya's going to come around here. And we're going to put the blood pressure cuff on her arm.
And I can't do too much about the mic because it might fall off. So I'm just going to try to, you tell me how to position myself for an accurate reading.
So just stick your arm out. We'll put it on, put it through there. She's got a very skinny arm, so I'm going to have to try to get this on there nice and tight. Okay, so that's all she does. And then just rest your arm. We'll literally just turn the device on. And you can hear it kind of pushing air, and she's probably going to feel that it's getting tight right now. I don't know if you can see the numbers, but that number right there represents the pressure in the cuff. And I read 140s, and now it's going to start slowly letting air out of the cuff. And I'm just going to go ahead and put it down so I'm not really disturbing it. And it stopped, and it told me Maya's blood pressure is 99/73. And it told me her heart rate is 87. And those are both extremely healthy blood pressure and heart rate. So we won't have to be sending you to the doctor anytime soon. But that's as simple as it is. You just put your arm in, you press a button, and within a minute, you get a number.
So speaking of the numbers, Dr. Riss, thank you for that. I used to find myself every time I went to a doctor's office and had the blood pressure taken, they would give me the numbers. And as if I know the numbers, they're like, oh, it's this and that. And I'm like, is that good or bad?
Yeah.
And right. Because, yeah. And so I'm wondering if people question, I guess if you have a blood pressure issue over time, you kind of know what numbers are ideal, but please go over that with us.
Yeah. And you're probably right that if people have blood pressure issues, your doctor's going to talk to you about what your goals are and what's too high and what's too low. In my opinion, even when we're managing people with high blood pressure, we don't get their blood pressure as low as it should be.
Okay.
Because, as we've evolved in our knowledge and understanding about blood pressure, we've actually lowered what we think the blood pressure should be. Mm-hmm. Back when I started in medicine a few decades ago, if your blood pressure was below 140 and below 90, so 138/88,
mm-hmm.
people would say that's a normal blood pressure. You're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Go about your normal business. You don't need to do anything.
Okay.
Today, 138/88 is considered hypertension.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And so today, they want your blood pressure to be below 130 and below 80. Okay, so ideally that upper number in the 120s and that lower number in the 70s. Okay, and in my opinion, the lower the better, as long as you're not symptomatic. Okay, and what I mean by symptomatic, getting dizzy when you stand up, fainting spells, things like that.
Those are signs of having high blood pressure?
Those are signs of having low blood pressure.
Low blood pressure,
yeah.
Okay.
And so what the interesting thing is, you'll see that athletes have extremely low blood pressures, and it's scary to some people. My blood pressure runs 90 over 60, and at the doctor's office, when they take my blood pressure, I went in for a CAT scan one time, and my blood pressure was 90 over 60, and they didn't want to let me go home, and I kept telling them, that's my normal blood pressure. I showed them my Apple Health thing and I said it, but they still wouldn't let me go home, and they called the doctor, and then they gave me some IV fluids, and they were treating a number and not understanding. But so in my opinion, the lower the better.
Yeah.
Because the blood pressure is kind of a reflection of the health of your artery. And it's a reflection of what your heart is working against for your entire lifetime.
Can we talk about nutrition and even exercise and how that can help blood pressure?
Yeah. I have my order on how we can affect blood pressure with lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the most important and significant impact that we can have on our blood pressure is through our nutrition, basically the way we eat. Mm-hmm. Probably the second most important way that we can have an impact is through exercise. Okay. So, and I really want to stress that, because there's a lot of people who think that they're obese and their blood pressure is 180 over 120, and they think that they're going to go out and exercise and that's going to cure their blood pressure. But not really. Really, what's going to help their blood pressure the most is their nutrition. Okay. And then exercise comes in second. And then I do believe that other lifestyle factors have an impact. And that has to do with sleep and stress. And that's because both of those have significant impacts on hormones in our body that are cyclical in nature that have impacts on our blood pressure throughout the day, specifically epinephrine, which is adrenaline, and cortisol. Okay. And those two hormones have significant impacts on our blood pressure throughout the day.
Okay. So as you know, Dr. Riz, I reference the American Stroke Association. Some of the recommendations are to increase fruits and vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, and limit intake of saturated fat, trans fat, red meat, sugar and salt. What I find interesting is that they throw these words out there like saturated fat and trans fat without going into detail of where you find the saturated fat in the cholesterol. So can you touch on that a little bit?
The cholesterol and the saturated fat come from animal products. And so I'm also an advocate for limiting the amount of animal products that you eat, taking it down as low as possible or even eliminating if that's within your lifestyle and your belief set. The most important thing I think you can do from a dietary standpoint is to eliminate salt or sodium in your diet. You're going to get plenty from all of the foods you eat, so there's no reason to add it. And also read the labels on the foods that you get. You can buy canned beans that have 15 milligrams of sodium, and you can buy canned beans that have 600 milligrams of sodium. So, you know, that makes a big difference. And if you do that on a daily basis over the course of a lifetime, that makes a huge difference.
Yep.
So I think that's very important. Now, cholesterol and saturated fat do something to your arteries. They stiffen your arteries. And there are studies out there that show that when you eat a meal that has saturated fat and cholesterol in it, within just a short time, within a couple of hours of having that meal, your arteries stiffen. And that leads to increased blood pressure. So cholesterol and saturated fat not only are bad for you from the standpoint of developing atherosclerosis, but they are bad for you from the standpoint of the health of your arteries and your blood pressure.
So a number of studies now show that high fiber intake may help ward off stroke. So less than 3% of Americans meet the minimal daily recommendations of fiber. That's 97% of Americans that are fiber deficient. Now, fiber is concentrated in whole foods. As you just said, those are the main foods that you recommend. Processed foods have less fiber, and animal-derived foods have no fiber at all.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. This is interesting. So if you just add 7 grams of fiber daily to your diet, and 7 grams can look like a bowl of oatmeal or berries, or even a serving of baked beans, that will reduce your risk by 7%. Just right. 7 grams of fiber. Also, the fiber helps control cholesterol, blood sugar, and reduce blood pressure. But we never talk about fiber in terms of blood pressure. Like in everything that I referenced through the larger organizations, they don't really talk about fiber. They just say, you know, eat more fruits and vegetables, whole grains, legumes, which have fiber, but they don't emphasize the importance of dietary fiber. We're not talking about the supplement that you put, you know, the powder in water. The other thing was potassium. That can also help lower blood pressure. And many times when we think of potassium, we think of bananas. Dr. Greger made this wonderful comparison in saying that actually bananas and potassium are very, very low on the list. The potassium level could be equivalent to that of a Reese's Pieces.
Right, right.
That you want to eat foods that are really rich in potassium, like greens, beans, and sweet potatoes, and also hibiscus tea for hypertension. And you talk often about hibiscus tea.
I'm a big fan of hibiscus tea. Mm-hmm. It's one of those, you know, I'm an advocate for a whole food plant-based diet, you know, wherever you are on the spectrum of that, but just the more fruits and vegetables and beans and greens that you, I call myself a beans and greens kind of guy. There's this something very special about hibiscus tea that will help you lower your blood pressure. And I personally saw this again. This is just my own personal experience or an anecdotal story about myself. But because I'm so into my Apple Health app and recording my blood pressure and my heart rate, I eat when I would drink just one glass of hibiscus tea on a nightly basis. Mm-hmm. I saw my blood pressure drop 10 points and I saw my heart rate drop 10 points. And it was very, very, wow. You know, very timely. I started mm-hmm. drinking the tea. Within a couple of days, that drop happened. Then when you saw me stop drinking the tea, mm-hmm. Everything returned back yeah. to where it was.
That is amazing. And the cardiovascular, how to prevent cardiovascular disease guide that you have has your recipe
yeah.
for hibiscus. So it's not just the basic hibiscus flower, but you put some nice spices in there too.
Yeah. I mean, you can just drink hibiscus tea, but mm-hmm. I kind of spiced it up the way my mom would make chai yeah. when I was a child. And she throws in some cardamom, some anise, clove, and so, you know, a couple of different spices in there that really make it spicy and tasty. And not to mention the fact that spices are extremely healthy for you as well. So it's a nice way to get some spices as well.
Absolutely. And so I want to recommend How Not to Die to our listeners. If you've never heard of Dr. Michael Greger, he really lists like the top 10 leading causes of death and how not to die from them. And he has a whole section of how not to die from brain diseases, which includes stroke and Alzheimer's disease, dementia as well. The second half of his book has all the dietary recommendations that he makes as well. And that's a great resource. We know that nutrition plays a significant role. You just talked about it. In terms of contributing to high blood pressure, cholesterol levels, diabetes, obesity, you name it. But unfortunately, some of these larger national organizations don't promote this way of eating. So I just kind of wanted to reiterate that and also talk about exercise, just being physically active. I recently had an episode on Blue Zones where we talk about like people in their community just being active, not so sedentary. So can you talk about that? You lead a walk every month here in the Dallas area as part mm-hmm. of Walk with the Dog. And you also, during your walk, have a short brief health topic, but can you tell us why moving is important?
So, yeah, well, thanks for bringing up the walk. We do with our walk every third Saturday of the month. Right now it's at noon, but during the summer months, we're going to move it up to earlier in the day when it's a little bit cooler. And I like to start with a short health topic. It might be whatever the health topic of the month is, or it might be something that's of interest to me. People tell me I talk too much and talk too long, so I got to keep them short. Because I really like to be thorough and give you as much information as possible, but you know, at least we introduce a health topic, and then and it might be that's a good way to a good topic then for us then when we go walking, and people can talk to me about it. And what we do is we have a nice little 1 mile track on a lake, with ducks and squirrels and wildlife, which is really fun to walk. And we typically go around two times. Some people choose to go around more. And I walk back and forth between the people and talk to them about different health topics.
Yeah.
So for me, that's just a great way to get out and get some exercise. And exercise doesn't have to be, we've kind of got this exercise culture where everybody thinks about being marathoners and Olympic athletes and bodybuilders. And that's not what healthy exercise is. Healthy exercise is moderate exercise on a regular basis, on a regular repetitive basis. And so it just means going out for a brisk walk several times a week. I recommend, and this is based on the national societies that I work with on lifestyle medicine, which is 30 minutes five times a week of a nice brisk walk. If you're a runner, it can be 15 minutes five times a week. So it changes depending on the pace that you go at. Okay. But the thing about exercise and specifically hypertension, which we've been talking about, is that it's good for your arteries. It's good for your heart. It can exercise slows down your heart rate and it helps your arteries dilate. And so it is good for lowering your blood pressure. So people who exercise regularly can lower their blood pressure a few points, somewhere between 6 to 10 points. So when you start talking about people, you know, if somebody's got a blood pressure of 148 over 90, they could be on a pill. And that takes them down, but they still have the underlying mechanism that's causing the blood pressure.
Yep.
But if you go out there and you make some lifestyle changes, start exercising, eliminate sodium from your diet, start to limit your cholesterol and saturated fat, get better sleep. When each of those things, if all of those things each take 5 points off or 8 points off of your blood pressure, suddenly you've gone from something in the 140s down to 120 over something, and you've normalized your blood pressure just through lifestyle. So your blood pressure is normal. Okay. You don't have hypertension that you're taking a pill for and you still have hypertension. You now have cured your hypertension. So there's a big difference to live a lifestyle with normal blood pressure versus living a lifestyle with hypertension and taking a pill. You're still going to encounter the complications of that hypertension later on down your life. Drink your hibiscus tea too.
Yeah, and drink that tea. It's so good. You talked earlier about reducing the intake of saturated fat. I did a whole episode on protein and the myths associated with protein. So I'm going to link that one too, because many people think they have to eat meat to thrive, to survive. They think, and also the dairy products. So I have to eat meat to build muscle or to lose weight, or to have my iron. Otherwise I might be anemic, or I have to have dairy to have calcium. Well, all these things are found in the beans and in the greens. So you can have a very healthy, diet with those foods. And it's just a matter of sending people to the right places to get the right foods. And that's how you get rid of the trans fat, well, the saturated fat, the added cholesterol, and then reducing our intake of junk food, which are processed foods. That's where the trans fats are found, the cookies and the cakes and all of that. And then you also mentioned, I wanted to touch on something else that you mentioned associated with stress. You were talking about reducing the stress, and we now do yoga in this end too. Mm-hmm. We have Calm, the app that I use on a regular basis to reduce my anxiety. I find that even restorative yoga is very useful for me to reduce my stress, because stress can contribute to high blood pressure. Right?
Right, right. So that's I think those are important things too. When you put all of these lifestyle factors together, they each contribute to lowering your blood pressure to differing extents, but then they can, you know, but they're additive.
Yeah. One more thing that I wanted to mention, Dr. Riss, is I wanted to send people to your social media. Instagram is at dr_riz_bukhari. You're releasing a lot of great content associated with the topic of strokes, you know, stroke prevention, and also walk with the doc. Depending on when this episode airs, your next walk is the third Saturday of May at noon. There's a link for the Walk with the Dog page that we have, so you know exactly where we're walking. And do you have a final message for our listeners?
Yeah, a couple things. Talking about links, number one, I think you should put a link for Dr. Greger's book, How Not to Die.
Okay.
Because I think that's a great book. It addresses all of the major health issues that we face today and what you can do in your life to reduce your risk related to that.
Okay.
So I think a link in the show notes would be very nice.
Okay.
And now, you know, as far as the message is, I deal with very, very sick patients. Mm-hmm. My patients all have diabetes and hypertension and kidney problems, and they're all overweight. They all have atherosclerosis. They all have heart disease. Many have had strokes. Lots of them have gangrene. And a significant contributing factor to all of this is hypertension. And I've addressed the term metabolic syndrome on one of my walks, and maybe I think we should have that as one of our topics for an upcoming doctor in the house. Did I get that right?
Yes.
But what I got to say is that hypertension is a silent killer. It sits inside your body for years. You don't know it. It's causing damage. And by the time you find out about it, and by the time you start taking a pill for it, so much of the damage is already done that it's hard to reverse. Mm-hmm. So understanding more about hypertension, recognizing it earlier, making the lifestyle changes necessary to get rid of it, and or treating it as needed is extremely important. It's such an important disease to address that it can make a tremendous impact on your life.
Oh, thank you for that. And we know that with the recommendations that you've already made, that people can, with time, reduce or improve their blood pressure.
Yeah, everybody should go out and get one of those simple blood pressure machines and check their blood pressure. There's no reason not to.
Absolutely. We hope that you have enjoyed this series on stroke prevention for the month of May. You know, we try pulling resources mainly from the big organizations, but also we know that a lot of the people that we follow that are trained in lifestyle medicine and plant-based nutrition have a lot of real science-based content. And so we try to incorporate that as well. There's a guide, the American Stroke Association has a guide for patients and caregivers. So Dr. Riss, in the previous episode, you kind of talked about how people live with complications. Stroke survivors can live with very debilitating complications. And this guide kind of helps you to have a little bit more control. It's like a little workbook where you go through it and you talk about lifestyle changes that you've been making, and you recognize your risk factors and all of that. And it really gives you tools for yourself and for your caregiver. As a survivor, depending on the damage that happened, you might have to see various specialists and work closely with other people to support you, including a caregiver, to help you with day-to-day activities that you no longer have freedoms to do. You said that in the past that your patients have said that they would rather die than to live debilitated.
Yep. I mean, stroke is the number one cause of disability in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not a fun lifestyle.
That's right. So we hope that you take a lot of this content to heart, that you share these episodes with people that you love, who you also want to benefit from the content that we're sharing. We spend a lot of time researching these topics so that you can have more knowledge to take control of your health. And let us know if there are other health topics that you would like us to address. We try to, you know, when they're being highlighted in a particular month, we try to choose those. But strokes, like you said, it's the number two killer. It's up there with heart disease.
Number three. Heart disease is number one. Cancer is number two. Stroke is number three.
Okay. So we want to thank you again. And Dr. Riz, thank you again for making yourself available to educate our listeners on the things that they can do to take control of their health.
So, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks again for listening. You've been listening to the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions podcast with your host, Maya Acosta. If you've enjoyed this podcast, do us a favor and share with one friend who can benefit from this episode. Feel free to leave an honest review as well at ratethispodcast.com/HLS. This helps us to spread our message. And as always, thank you for being a listener.